You know, every airplane flying today exists because somebody said yes. But for every yes, there were dozens of programs where somebody eventually said no. And some of those no's are absolutely fascinating. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar today. We're going to walk through 10 aircraft programs that got scrapped, programs that most people never talk about, programs that were defined by enormous ambition, often driven by war, and sometimes featuring designs so unusual you'd swear somebody was making them up. These aren't the famous cancellations like the Avro Arrow or the Boeing Sonic Cruiser. These are the ones that slipped through the cracks of aviation history before we get into it. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's start with one that sounds like science fiction. Number one. The Convair NB-36H, sometimes called the Crusader. This was a nuclear-powered bomber. You heard that right? In the late 1940s and into the 50s, the United States Air Force was absolutely serious about putting a nuclear reactor inside a strategic bomber. The idea was simple on paper. A nuclear-powered aircraft would have virtually unlimited range. You could keep a bomber airborne for days, maybe weeks, orbiting Soviet airspace without ever needing to refuel. The NB-36H was a modified Convair B-36 Peacemaker. They actually flew it 47 times with a small operational reactor on board, though the reactor never powered the engines. It was a test to see whether the crew could be adequately shielded from radiation. The answer was sort of, the lead and rubber shielding weighed 11 tons. The crew compartment had walls 12 inches thick, and the fundamental problem never went away. What happens when this airplane crashes? You've just created a dirty bomb on your own soil? The program was canceled in 1961. Intercontinental ballistic missiles made the whole concept unnecessary, but for over a decade, the Air Force genuinely tried to make nuclear-powered flight work. Number two, the Lockheed CL-400 Suntan. While most people know Lockheed's Skunk Works for the U-2 and the SR-71 Blackbird, almost nobody talks about the airplane that came between them. The CL-400 was a hydrogen-powered reconnaissance aircraft designed in the mid-1950s, liquid hydrogen as fuel. The concept offered incredible performance because hydrogen has almost 3 times the energy density of jet fuel by weight. Kelly Johnson's team got deep into the program before running into a wall that should have been obvious from the start. Liquid hydrogen has to be stored at minus 423 degrees Fahrenheit. The fuel tanks would have been enormous, and the logistics of handling liquid hydrogen at remote bases around the world were essentially impossible with 1950s technology. The program was classified for decades. Johnson himself eventually redirected the team's work toward what became the A-12, and then the SR-71, which used JP-7 fuel instead. Suntan was scrapped, but the engineering knowledge fed directly into the Blackbird. So, in a sense, it didn't entirely die. It evolved. Number three, the Northrop YB-49 Flying Wing Bomber. Now, most aviation enthusiasts know about Jack Northrop and his obsession with flying wings. The B-2 Spirit stealth bomber is essentially the vindication of his life's work. But the YB-49, which flew in the late 1940s, was a jet-powered evolution of the earlier propeller-driven YB-35, and it came shockingly close to becoming America's primary strategic bomber. It flew beautifully. Test pilots loved it, but the aircraft had a fatal flaw for its intended mission. It was inherently unstable in yaw, which made it a poor bombing platform. Remember, this was the era of the Norden bombsight. You needed to fly straight and level for an extended bomb run. The YB-49 couldn't hold course precisely enough. The Air Force chose the Convair B-36 instead, and here's the part that still generates controversy. After the program was canceled, the Air Force ordered all 11 YB-49 airframes destroyed, cut up with torches. Jack Northrop believed until his dying day that the cancellation was political, not technical. He may not have been entirely wrong, but the yaw instability was real, and fly-by-wire computers that could have solved it were still decades away. Number 4. The de Havilland DH-108 Comet, specifically the original Comet 1 program. Now you might say, wait, the Comet flew, it entered service, and you'd be right, but the Comet 1 program as originally conceived was scrapped after 2 catastrophic in-flight breakups in 1954, BOAC Flight 781 out of Rome and South African Airways Flight 201. Both disintegrated at altitude. The investigation revealed something that engineers had never encountered before, metal fatigue around the square-cornered windows caused by repeated pressurization cycles. The Comet 1 was the world's first commercial jetliner, and it taught the entire industry a lesson written in wreckage. The original Comet 1 design was permanently grounded. De Havilland eventually produced the Comet 4, with oval windows and thicker skin, but by then Boeing had the 707 ready, and the British lead in jet aviation was gone forever. What makes this a scrap program rather than just an accident is that the entire original airframe design was abandoned. Every Comet 1 was pulled from service and never flew commercially again. Number 5. The Avro 730. Not the famous Avro Aero which everyone talks about. The 730 was a delta-wing transatlantic airliner proposed in the late 1940s. Avro Canada envisioned a jet-powered passenger aircraft that would cross the Atlantic at speeds approaching Mach 1. This was before the Comet even flew. The 730 would have seated roughly 40 passengers in a pressurized fuselage mated to a massive delta wing. The Canadian government initially supported the project, but the economics didn't work. 40 seats couldn't generate enough revenue to justify the fuel consumption of early turbojet engines. The program was quietly canceled in favor of the C-102 jetliner, which itself was eventually scrapped when the Korean War redirected Avro's resources to the CF-100 fighter, two revolutionary airliners, both killed before they could prove themselves. Number 6. The Bartini-Beriev VVA-14. This was a Soviet vertical takeoff amphibious aircraft from the 1970s. If you've never seen a picture of it, stop what you're doing after this broadcast and look it up. It looks like something from a fever dream. The VVA-14 was designed to take off vertically, fly at high speed, and land on water to hunt NATO submarines. It had a central fuselage flanked by enormous inflatable pontoons and was powered by a combination of lift jets and cruise engines. The Soviets actually built and flew a prototype starting in 1972. It made over 100 flights in various configurations, but the lift engines were unreliable, the inflatable pontoons were a maintenance nightmare, and the whole concept was overtaken by more conventional anti-submarine warfare aircraft. After designer Robert Bartini died in 1974, the program lost its champion and was eventually canceled. One prototype survives today in a Russian aviation museum, looking every bit as strange as it sounds. Number 7. The Boeing X-20 Dinosaur. This was a crude, reusable spaceplane designed to be launched on a Titan rocket, glide through space, perform reconnaissance or bombing missions, and land on a conventional runway. Sound familiar? It should. The X-20 was essentially the space shuttle concept, but 20 years earlier, and with a military mission. The program ran from 1957 to 1963 and consumed over $410 million, which in today's money is well over $4 billion. Boeing built mock-ups. They selected astronaut pilots, including a young Neil Armstrong who was initially assigned to the program before transferring to NASA. The X-20 was canceled by Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara in December 1963, just weeks before the first planned flight. McNamara decided that unmanned satellites could perform the reconnaissance mission more cheaply. He was probably right. But the engineering work on the X-20 directly influenced the space shuttle program a decade later. Number 8. The Sukhoi Su-47 Burkut, which means Golden Eagle. This was a Russian forward-swept wing fighter that first flew in 1997. Forward-swept wings. Think about that for a moment. Almost every swept-wing aircraft in history sweeps the wings backward. The Su-47 swept them forward at roughly negative 20 degrees. The theoretical advantages were significant. Better low-speed handling improved maneuverability, resistance to stall at high angles of attack. The aircraft looked like nothing else in the sky, almost insect-like. But the problems were equally significant. Forward-swept wings experience aeroelastic divergence, meaning the aerodynamic forces try to twist the wing further forward as speed increases until the wing fails structurally. The only way to prevent this was to build the wings from advanced carbon fiber composites, which in 1990s, Russia were prohibitively expensive. Only one prototype was ever built. It flew as a technology demonstrator for years, but a production fighter based on the design was never financially viable. Russia chose the more conventional Su-57 for its fifth-generation fighter program instead. Number 9. The Martin P-6M Seamaster. This was a jet-powered flying boat strategic bomber from the 1950s, and it is one of the most forgotten, ambitious programs in American aviation history. The Navy wanted a nuclear-capable bomber that could operate from the open ocean, independent of runways that the Soviets might target. The Seamaster was a beautiful aircraft, a swept-wing, four-engine jet that took off and landed on water. It could carry nuclear weapons, lay mines, and conduct reconnaissance. Martin built and flew several prototypes starting in 1955, but the program was plagued by crashes. Two prototypes were lost, killing their crews. the aerodynamics of a high-performance jet operating from water surfaces created problems that were never fully solved. And strategically, the development of submarine-launched ballistic missiles, specifically the Polaris program, eliminated the need for a seaplane bomber. Why risk a crewed aircraft when you can launch a missile from beneath the ocean? The Seamaster was canceled in 1959 after roughly $400 million in spending. Today, almost no one remembers it. And number 10, the Douglas X-3 Stiletto. This was a research aircraft built to investigate sustained supersonic flight and the use of titanium in aircraft structures. It first flew in 1952, and on paper it should have been a milestone aircraft. It had a long, needle-nosed fuselage, tiny straight wings, and was designed to reach Mach 2. The problem was its engines. The Westinghouse J-34 turbojets were woefully underpowered for the airframe. The X-3 could barely reach Mach 1 in a dive, let alone sustain supersonic flight in level cruise. It was, by most accounts, a disappointment as a research aircraft in its primary mission. But here's the twist. During testing, the X-3 inadvertently demonstrated a phenomenon called inertial coupling, where the aircraft's long fuselage and short wings caused violent and unexpected roll departures at high speed. This discovery was critically important. It directly influenced the design of the Lockheed F-104 Starfighter, which had a similar configuration but was engineered from the start to handle the coupling problem. So the X-3 failed at what it was supposed to do but succeeded spectacularly at something nobody expected. And that really is the thread that runs through all 10 of these programs. In aviation, even the failures teach us something. The nuclear bomber taught us about shielding and the limits of acceptable risk. The Comet taught us about metal fatigue. The Seamaster taught us that some operating environments just don't work for certain aircraft types. And the forward-swept Burcutt proved that aerodynamic theory and economic reality don't always agree. These programs burn through billions of dollars and years of engineering talent. But the knowledge didn't disappear. It migrated into the aircraft that did make it to production. Every airplane you fly or fly on today carries DNA from programs that never made it. This one pulled from Simple Flying's coverage of overlooked aircraft programs. Find more at radiohangar.com. I'm Tower, stay curious, and keep looking up.